Hey everybody, this week we're talking about Die Hard.
Hit the music.
Hey, everybody. I'm Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty. This is Flaherty's on Films. It's a little podcast. We talk about movies. Michael, what are we talking about this week? What the fuck is it about?
I'll go ahead with the description. Die Hard. An NYPD officer tries to save his wife and several others taken by hostage by German terrorists during a Christmas party at the Nakatomi Plaza in Los Angeles.
Here's what I love about the description. It's like dedicated to no spoilers. He tries to save his wife from terrorists. Who knows?
Should have said who knows. Is the fact that they're German matter?
I feel like there's a lot of unnecessary detail, like that it's at the Nakatomi Plaza
Angeles. Now I'm interested. If it was just downtown.
The Nakatomi Plaza, of course.
It'd have to be a big building for me to care.
That's not a real building. It's not called Nakatomi Plaza, I meant.
Let's do a 2 second thoughts.
Good. Die Hard is pretty good.
You know what else is pretty good? Very good, in fact.
Tell me.
Is our first segment, which is called What the Hell?
Time for Michelle. This is the part of the show where Michelle comes on and tells some super cool facts about the show because, bam, time for Sam. She's getting married now, so she has different priorities.
So now she has a man. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi.
Hi.
This is my turn now.
Now you are speaking.
Anyways, this instant classic Christmas movie is based on a novel. It's based on a 1979 crime novel by Roderick Thorpe called Nothing Lasts Forever, which is a sequel to his 1966 novel, The Detective. Frank Sinatra had to be offered the role of John McClane. He was the lead in the movie adaptation for The Detective, the prequel. So he had to be offered the lead.
Brag that I know the term right of first refusal? Like, I just know it. Can you be impressed?
I don't know. What does it mean, Michael?
It means they have to offer it to Frank Sinatra. That's what that means.
That's why do you know that? That is very cool.
It's very impressive. It's very impressive. Go ahead.
See, Frank Sinatra had first right of refusal?
Right of first refusal.
Right of first refusal. For Die Hard, he was 73 at the time, so he turned it down.
Can you imagine?
Damn it.
Probably good. Clint Eastwood also could have played John McClure. John McClane, there we go. He actually bought the movie rights to Nothing Lasts Forever, the book, and planned to star in the film in the early 80s, but that version was never filmed, and he was too old by the time they actually got around to making it.
In 1988, he was too old?
I don't know.
When was Dirty Harry? I mean, he's always the guy who's looked old.
70s.
Except when he was young and super hot.
But isn't this movie much more physical than like a Western?
I guess. Yeah. I don't remember Bruce Willis doing any sweet stunts. Do you, Michael?
He was running. He jumped off a building. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah. That's pretty stunt-like.
I'm not seeing Frank Sinatra jump off a building.
I didn't say I wasn't gunning for Frank Sinatra. But I assume he would have just sung a song on the side of the building, which would have been pretty cool, also.
It'd be fun.
Yeah, he would have been gunned down, though. You can go ahead.
Actually, Bruce Willis wasn't even close to the studio's first choice for the lead because he was considered like a TV actor and not a film actor and a comedic actor at that. Like, there was no way he could lead this blockbuster action movie. So, this is your question of the week.
Yay! Gary.
Rumor has it at least 10 other male actors were considered for the role before Mr. Willis. Name as many as you can. And Sinatra and Eastwood don't count.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Sylvester Stallone.
Steve Guttenberg. I don't know a lot of 80s actors. Michael J. Fox. No, that's not.
Val Kilmer.
Oh God, Michael. Tom Cruise.
Who's in The Expendables? Jason Statham.
He would have been like 10.
10-year-old Jason Statham.
That would have been adorable. Sorry, I'm just imagining a little boy with a Cockney British accent. Very cute. Saying yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Guys, just imagine.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Is he wearing a ball cap? Because that'd be funny.
Because they knew the future he'd be a bald action star and it'd be very funny.
He's like, why am I doing this? And they're like, you'll do it later.
Oh God, I can't think of any other 80s stars. Did we get any so far?
Michael is currently in the lead with one.
Shit.
Yeah. You guys want to hear the list?
Yes.
George Clooney.
No.
Another one. All right.
The one that Michael got, because he wins question of the week, is Sylvester Stallone. Mm. Others include Harrison Ford, Robert De Niro, yeah, Charles Bronson, Nick Nolte. That'd be funny. Mel Gibson, Richard Gere, John Johnson,
Wasn't Nick Nolte like a real hottie at the time?
He might have been in like the Val Kilmer kind of... Wait, no, he was less pretty than Kilmer.
Sure.
Burt Reynolds and Richard Dean Anderson, also known as... Shoot, MacGyver. That's MacGyver.
We should have got some of those. We should have got De Niro.
Ford, maybe. Gibson.
Yeah, Harrison Ford. Yeah, we should have guessed him.
I just Googled Nick Nolte 1987. Not bad.
Question. Could he get it?
Maybe a few drinks he could get it. He looks like a guy who is only 35 to 40, but looks older. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense.
Okay. Just so we're there. Anyway, sorry, go on.
In other alternate versions of this movie, Sam Neill was offered the role of Hans first, but he turned it down. The casting director saw Alan Rickman in a stage production of Dangerous Liaison, and this is Mr. Rickman's first feature film.
Which is crazy.
Crazy.
Why is that crazy?
Because he's very good.
He's very talented, and he was in his 40s.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like he was his first acting role.
It's his first, like, movie role.
Right. I'm saying I feel like those skills translate. I don't think it's remarkable.
Sorry, I don't think it's crazy that he did such a good job. I think it's crazy that he was not recognized earlier for all his great stage work.
Maybe he didn't want to be in film earlier.
Oh, shit.
It's not like film is the best thing. Oh, theater?
Film is the best thing.
Well, if only I could do film. I'm Alan Rickman.
There's no way he makes more money in plays than in movies.
It's not all about the fucking money, Michelle. How often do I have to tell you that? How often do we have that conversation?
More often than I would like to admit.
The guy just did Die Hard, so he does care a little about money.
A little bit. Well, he's 40 now.
This movie was nominated for, but did not win, 4 Oscars. It was nominated for Best Sound, Best Film Editing, Best Sound Effects Editing, and Best Visual Effects.
Sure.
Had a budget of $28 million, and the worldwide gross was $141 million. It's not bad.
Money.
Yeah. The panoramic view of the city below the tower is not real. It is instead a 380-foot-long background painting that has animated lights, moving traffic, and it has the ability to change the scene from day to night, which is really cool.
Whoa.
Yep, it was used in subsequent other productions that the studio made.
But that building is real, right? That's like a real...
The building is real. It was actually, I think it's like Fox Century's tower.
It's Fox Plaza.
Yes.
I thought it was like the building across the street from Fox.
No, it's actually their building. It was under construction at the time, so they didn't have to do anything to shoot it.
Oh, that's nice. Neat.
Yeah, that was a bonus fact.
Nice. Love bonus facts.
Yeah. John McClane's tumble down the ventilation shaft was a mistake. The scene was actually supposed to feature McClane grabbing the first vent after he jumped, but the stuntman missed the vent by like a mile. So the director kept it in because it was more suspenseful.
Good call.
We watched this with our Uncle Jimmy, and he was fucking pissed when he saw that, because he's like, there's no way he would do a free fall down event and then, or down an elevator shaft and then grip onto. And I'm like, that's fine. I don't know. It didn't make
sense. This is a movie about German terrorists in a construction site. Like, what else is not real about this?
I mean, it's probably the most realistic of the diehards, but.
Yes. No one takes out a helicopter with a car.
I mean, we don't know.
We don't know.
Not in this one.
I thought the most unrealistic is the second one, which is in Dulles Airport, and the terrorist but not terrorist whole plan depends on them riding out on snowmobiles. It's like,
oh,
you fucking idiots. Because Michelle and I lived in the D.C. area, so we know. It doesn't snow.
We did. Virginia doesn't get snow like that.
Dummies. Dummies!
Rickman also had a stunt go mildly wrong, kind of. In order to look like he fell off the building, Rickman was supposed to drop onto an airbag 20 feet below. But in order to...
It's so high!
It's really high, but in order to capture a realistic reaction, they actually dropped him on the count of two instead of the customary three, which I think is just so rude.
I love it. Love it. It's for art. I
would murder someone after that. Quit and then murder.
But his look was genuinely surprised, which I gotta say, his look is a bit silly, but that's so authentic. Because surprise!
We didn't think it was coming!
Surprise terror is a bit silly in the face.
That's fair. The German spoken in the film is almost all gibberish. So they had to redo it before this movie was released in Europe.
That's great.
Really funny.
Yeah.
I have a fun fact about that. Can I share?
Yes, of course.
So as you know, I'm very well traveled. But we were staying with these guys in Austria long, long ago. And they had a Die Hard poster we were talking about because I loved the film. And they're like, the weird thing is we like to watch in English because there are some really weird translations in German, including instead of yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, they say yippee-ki-yay, pink cheeks. Now, I have always told the story and I've never looked up if that's true or not. Until today, because I thought that would be interesting. And what they actually say is something that more correctly translates to like cheeky bastard. It is literally pink cheeks in English, but it means like cheeky bastard.
Oh, fun.
So that's my fun fact.
I love that fun fact. Actually, that dovetails very nicely with my last fun fact. Bruce Willis actually came up with yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
That's pretty good.
Which is very fun. He said it as a throwaway joke just to make the crew laugh, and he thought there was no way it would end up in the film. But it
nice.
Did.
That's so, interesting, because I feel like that whole scene kind of builds toward that line.
Right. I should have researched this, but I didn't. I kind of want to know what was in the script in its place.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just yippee-ki-yay instead of the motherfucker.
Oh, yeah, maybe. All right, Michelle, that was an awesome segment.
Those were amazing facts.
Yeah.
That was, what the hell?
Time for Michelle.
Oh, that was so good.
Why do we say the segment after the segment? Because it's not time anymore. Why don't we just move on?
Because we say that was in the past.
Yeah, but why don't we not? We should not
do it. It's called a button, and we are professionals.
But the button is just the segment title of the next segment, right? No other podcast says that was that segment, now this segment. They just say the next segment.
Is that a thing? I don't know. I don't listen to podcasts.
No other. I mean, can you think of one? When the office ladies, do they go, well, that was us chatting like
yes,
ladies.
Yes, she does that all the time because she'll do her like... her little facts, her fast facts, and that was the last of my fast facts, is what she says usually.
But Michelle said that was the last of my facts, but then we also go, and that was what the hell time for Michelle.
I guess to me, that's always like saying thank you, Michelle, for coming on. Because well, we don't button any of our other segments
it's
that way.
It's too much buttoning. So this went on way too long. Our next segment
no,
is called...
No, you can cut it out. You have that power.
No, it's funny, though. Our next segment is Critics Corner. And this is a segment where we get some reviews of the film.
From the critics. By the way, this film is really highly reviewed. Like, I was shocked. Because I would think, you know, it's like... This is a funny guilty pleasure. It was like 89% around tomatoes. So this review is from Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian. It's a glorious scene stealer for Alan Rickman, though it's a credit to Willis's cheeky charisma that his scene is not, in fact, stolen.
All right. Here's from R.S. Lilly. Excuse me, I'm burping. This mindless, violent, totally lacking in realism. And that's that review.
I mean, I don't know what she wanted from this film.
Something more real, something less violent, and more mindful.
Thank you, Michael. As a grand flourish of cinematic technique, it is awesome. As a human drama, it is disgusting and silly. A mindless depiction of carnage on an epic scale, says Kevin Thomas of the Los Angeles Times.
Yeah, it's a mindless movie.
But that's the fun.
Oh, this guy's name is great. This guy's called Ramblin' Man. And he is an Amazon reviewer. Let's see what he has to say. I don't know how this made so many lists of top Christmas movies. Watching scores of people being shot to death in a high rise isn't my idea of a Christmas movie. Unless you are a psychopath. On top of that, it's boring. I stopped watching before the end. There is just so many ways this old film can kill a bad guy. And then it's just a broken record of fake death.
Does he want real death?
So too. Yeah, real gore.
All right. Well, this is a good pause, Michael. So I think this is something that's kind of annoying where people are like, oh, Die Hard's my favorite Christmas movie. And you're like, oh, get it? Because it's at Christmas. But now watching it recently, I'm like, this does actually have a lot of Christmas in it.
Like what?
Like, I mean, just that it references Christmas a lot. There's decorations all over. Like, the characters talk about it. You know, and we watched It's a Wonderful Life, which is a very famous Christmas film. But there isn't really anything about Christmas until the end when he just says, Merry Christmas, Bedford Falls.
You know, I mean, is that all you care about? Just these cheap aesthetic references? If I make a movie and I just say December 25th, is that a Christmas movie to you?
Well, that's a question. This is the question, Michael. What makes a Christmas movie?
Fucking deeper, man. So what is the message? What's the tone? What is it saying, right? If you're on Christmas, pretend it's Christmas right now.
Okay, I'm pretending.
You want to watch a movie about family and love and togetherness. Any movie
Isn't
can be a Christmas movie.
Isn't that what Die Hard is about?
No, though? No. That's it's about how gray cops are and how much you should change your name for your husband. That's this movie.
But also, like, some dudes just don't get feminism. Just give them a second.
Just
like, get there.
Just like, yeah, for Christmas.
Just like, God. Jeez. The world is changing really fast. I have some time to catch up.
What are we just going to cancel them?
I mean, it's a stupid conversation about favorite Christmas movie because, again, obviously, Muppet Christmas Carol is the best Christmas movie.
And my favorite Christmas movie is Muppet Treasure Island. Any movie can be a Christmas. It's about the feelings and the tone. And it should be lighthearted. It should be for kids. You know, Christmas is for kids. So it's got to be a kid's movie.
Fuck off. I like Christmas.
Yeah, but it's not for you.
It's for me if I want it to be for me.
All right. Well, fair enough.
Am I going to just not celebrate Christmas now?
You have so many other holidays. You have New Year's.
New Year's is stupid. I want to eat Christmas cookies. I want to watch Muppet Christmas. What am I saying? Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway.
It'd be a lot of Muppets.
Okay, so you're anti this being a Christmas movie. I'm
on don't give a shit team.
I guess I'm kind of on don't give a shit. And I feel like I was a little annoyed at people like,
gotcha. I feel like I've heard 9-1 ratio of complaining about other people saying it was a Christmas movie versus the one people saying it's a Christmas movie.
It's funny you say that for someone who's being it was anti this being a Christmas movie.
Maybe it's because I hang around 9 Colleen Flahertys and 1 everyone else.
Anyway, I guess it's my turn to read another review. Yippee-ki-yay, action fans, says Martin Chilton of the Daily Telegraph. And I guess nothing else.
Nice. Oh, boy. This is by OKG853. It's a typical one of his reviews. I just love the first line of this. I agree with Duh, hard. First, the positive. Oh, great. Bruce Willis is very nice eye candy.
He is mediocre
eye candy. He is not good eye candy. This is a Michael editorial. But in addition to being too long, it has too many characters.
I don't know. That's it's a weird complaint.
So predictable. It tries too hard. And as a result, it's laughable.
Whoa.
Damn.
I knew you would like duh hard.
That was my favorite part. That's all I'm going to remember from this whole podcast. So that was OKG. And yeah. That
was Critics Corner.
Sure was.
I want to mention this before we forget, but there's a few scenes where Bruce Willis is just kind of like in silhouette. And Michael was like, okay, so this is when Bruce Willis is hot.
Yeah, when you just see the muscles, the body shape.
Yeah. So he's a butterface.
Yeah.
Is your conclusion.
A shadow man.
Sexy shadow
man. Oh, go back in the shadows. Now we're going to our next favorite part. Segment, which is called Favorite Part, Least Favorite Part.
Michael, we didn't really say in the beginning, have you seen this movie before?
Well, I feel like it's just all kind of encompassed in this segment.
Right, so now I'm asking you.
Yes, I've seen it before. I've liked it before. I have never loved it before. And I still really don't, honestly. But it's fun.
Here's a weird thing about me that I'm going to tell you and share with the audience. I love action movies.
Which ones do you like?
Okay. Well, so I kind of think of them in three categories of good ones. There's the ones that are so silly, but still like well-edited and paced. That they're delightful to watch.
Yeah.
Your Jason Statham crank, if you will.
Nice. Well, that's a legitimately funny movie, though. It's got great comedy. That's not a bad movie at all. It's a good movie. I'm offended that you say it's a bad movie. It's just a straight up comedy film. And it's good comedy.
All right. What about Die Hard 4? Live Free, Die Hard. Perfect. That's also it's not a good movie.
No offense anymore.
No offense. Doesn't hurt your feelings.
Nope. Feelings
crank
are good.
Dumb. Crank is really dumb.
Yeah, but it's like on purpose. They're like, oh, we fucked up. Like, no, they did that.
Okay, you're right. I guess. Because then there are the action films that the action is so legitimately good, even if the premise is a bit silly. Like your John Wick.
Yeah.
And I think that Die Hard kind of falls into that category. It's still silly, but I just enjoy it as an action
film. I don't agree with that. Because I feel like John Wick is good because of the action. Like, it's choreographed well.
Yes, I agree with you there.
And it's some cool purple and blue lighting. But this movie is not really good because of its awesome effects and stunts and actions.
Right. And then there's, a third category where it's, the movie is so good that people don't even categorize as an action movie, even though I do like the action in it. And that's usually foreign action films, but... I do also like a lot of kung fu films that are almost always very silly.
What about Taken? Where's that fall?
See, now I would say Taken is actually really good action in a very different way from John Wick. So John Wick is those are great. It's great fight choreography. And I think Taken is just well-paced action and well-edited in a way we hadn't seen before in a novel way. So I actually think that is a very good action movie, even if it's silly.
I totally disagree again. I wouldn't even call it an action movie. I think it's just a thriller.
What's the difference?
Or an action movie, you're like, I want to see the stunts and the fighting and the cool things. Boo, action.
There's a lot of that in Taken. He fights people. A lot.
But I just feel like, I'm going to kill you. It's like the most of that movie. We're just like the suspenseful, oh no, it's happening. It's like.
Well, then Die Hard's not an action movie. By that definition?
Interesting.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
I don't really care about definitions that much. But I'm
you realized, wait a minute, I don't give a shit.
I don't care. I like action / thriller movies.
What are we even talking about? What are we talking about?
I like Die Hard is the conclusion.
Okay, got it.
Because I think Die Hard 1 is a really solid movie and it sort of influenced a lot of action. I think if you are familiar with the show 24, which probably has a really gross, awful ethos, but is really fun.
Really fun. Man, so funny.
So much fun.
Love Kiefer.
A lot of the similar plot of their terrorists. No.
Yeah.
A lot of that, which is very fun. And then when you get to Die Hard 3, and then much more so with Die Hard 4, it gets so silly, but so entertaining. And then Die Hard 5 is a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
What am I saying? I like Die Hard. That's it. I also don't feel like it's underrated anyway, because I think people like this too much, even though I also very much like
it. Now, you say you like it, but what's your favorite part?
No, let's do least favorite first.
You say you like it, but what's your least favorite part?
I think, now, I'm kind of dumb. I think if this movie is trying to make a point, I probably don't like that point.
You know what point it's trying to make.
Which is?
Well, I mean, it's not like hidden.
Well, so this is something I'm stealing from someone who, I don't know where I read it, so sorry for person whose idea I'm lifting. But this it was made in the 80s in Reagan's America, and it's like Bruce Willis is this super tough macho cop who's like dirty and whatever, and then Alan Rickman is this very effeminate, very well-dressed, dapper, super intellectual, and like, you know, and that's sort of a warring ideas of what real America is in probably a gross way, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really famous trope. I mean,
right.
I hate to go here, but isn't that referred to as gay coding for villains? When you give a villain like kind of, you know, gay characters like that.
Well, I don't think it was gay coding in this. I think it was European coding. Like this is the epitome of the European intellectual, which is the enemy of Reagan's America.
Gotcha.
And maybe it's a little gay code. I mean, maybe, right? Like some of those elements are there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, which is kind of interesting because Die Hard or Alan Rickman's character is like the first, you know, super dapper British villain archetype.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel weird about this because I think you and I have talked about how, like, for example, the best Disney villains are definitely leaning into gay coding, but they're awesome.
But they're just so fun.
I love them and I want more of it. Yeah. But I feel bad about what maybe they're trying to say there with that.
I mean, maybe it could just be offset. I mean, if you just don't apply the gay coding specifically to villains, like, mm-hmm. then it's fine. Like, make sure you have a little Josh Gad, just like a little bit in the beginning. That's a Beauty and the Beast reference.
Anyway, so yeah, I guess that's my, because I couldn't really think of something I totally hated about this movie. Like, that's just probably my least favorite. Maybe glorifying police officers. I don't know. But you know what? They don't even do that. They just glorify.
Yeah, they totally do. What are you talking about?
Well, no, because they glorify, like, because they make a lot of the other cops look like idiots. So,
whoa, it does, hold on. They make the upper management and the FBI and them look incompetent.
One of them is a deputy police officer. He's a bad guy, too. I think it's like these two are good cops and they understand each other.
I disagree. I think this is totally cop worship, this movie. Especially sure. when he's like, at the end of the day, I got to kill again. Ha ha. And that's like the...
Oh, yeah. We will talk about that later.
Victorious end. Hasn't aged well.
Yeah.
Has not aged well.
No, it is not. What's your least favorite part?
Probably that. And just, yeah, the weird, like, yeah, the symbolism of... She has the Rolex on and he takes it off to save her.
Well, this is what I was very confused about because it feels like the movie is also trying to make a point about working women, but I don't know what the point is.
But that's exactly it. I mean, you can't, if you're going to make a point, then you're playing your hand. Then it's obviously fucking weird, right? If you made the point, well, women shouldn't be working, I'd be like, what the fuck?
But. Well, he has this whole monologue about he should have been supportive and it's so great that she's so successful. And in the second movie, she still has a super successful job. And then at the end of the movie, she's like, I'm Mrs. McClane. I'm like, fuck, what is this?
Yeah, I'm saying it could be worse, but that doesn't make it good.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my least favorite part is trying to find any kind of lesson or ideal through this movie. Just don't. Just stop.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of weird because I do kind of like, I think this is one of the better action / thriller films for being a true underdog. I really like that.
What do you mean?
Just that he's out of his element, that you see him in pain, that you see his struggle, that it's like, it's inherently human in a way that bad action movies don't do. You know, like even in John Wick, where he's like a superhuman, but he still is struggling.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really well done. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. What's your favorite part of the film?
Alan Rickman. I thought about this a lot because there's so many things I like about this movie, but Alan Rickman's performance, even if we're going to argue about how bad his German accent was, it's just so good and so compelling. And every time he says anything, I'm just like here for it. And I want more of it. I don't even care if he's just always Professor Snape. It's too good. It shines over everything else I like about this
movie. Obviously, I agree. But is he even a good actor?
I don't know. I don't even know. That's a great question. Is he just doing the same bit every time as Alan Rickman in his amazing voice? Was probably.
Or is he just gifted that beautiful voice and that great face?
Right. Yes. When he says like, an Alexander Webb for there were no more worlds to conquer. It's like, isn't that when he says Mr. McLean, is that just Mr. Potter? It's the same thing. And I don't give a shit. It's too good.
Something I feel like about this movie maybe is that maybe it's kind of innovative and it started a lot of trends for action movies, but I think that's maybe why I don't like it so much, because when I watch it, you know, I'm post all those trends already happening. So I'm like, oh, sure, movie, action movie. I get it. You know what I mean? So I bet, yeah. I mean, I just imagine it's a lot more exciting at the time than it is
right.
now.
Right, the few one-star reviews that said it's so predictable. It's like, it wasn't at the time.
So that's why I'm saying, I'm not wild about this movie. I'm like, cool. But I don't. That's why I don't love it, I think.
Well, I'm not invested in the plot so much. I really like the dialogue a lot. I really like
I don't like any dialogue.
What? I wrote down some dialogue here.
No, I mean, just like in general. Like, not this movie. Oh. I've mentioned that before.
When my favorite character, the sexy, sexy Harry Ellis goes,
yeah.
Hans, Bobby, I'm your white knight.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's pretty good.
When Hans says, I wanted this to be, I'm not going to do the voice because I can't even.
Yeah, you can.
I wanted this
do
to
it.
Be professional, efficient, adult, cooperative. Not a lot to ask. Alas, your Mr. Takagaki did not see it the way, so he won't be joining us for the rest of his life. Great. Nice. And then the Alexander Rept, which is a really funny thing because I was like, what is that even from? Because he says, when Alexander wept or saw the breadth of his domain, he wept for there were no more worlds to conquer, the benefits of a classical education. He's not quoting anything. That's not a real thing. But apparently there's something from an old text about Alexander weeping over something else. So it is like, if he was a classically educated person, he would say something like that.
I feel like, is either one of us going to do the Alan Rickman Family Guy bit? Where they go, oh, this is more depressing than Alan Rickman's answering machine. And you hear it, it says, hello, this is Alan Rickman. Please leave a message. Beep. Hello, Alan Rickman. This is Alan Rickman. Remember to get eggs at the grocery store. Don't disappoint me.
Michael, that was so good.
Thank you.
There's one more line I like a lot though.
Yeah, what's up?
I think the line in Family Guy's, he needs to take the meat out of the freezer to defrost. But Holly goes, after all your posturing, after all your little speeches, you're nothing but a common thief. I'm an exceptional thief, Mrs.
Are those great lines? I don't know, they're just like fine. Are
and
they
since
great?
Since I'm moving up with kidnapping, you should be more polite. I mean, he could just read the phone book and it'd be fucking amazing. So good point.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not jazzed about those lines. They're fine.
I mean, fine.
I don't like lines that much, though. So I'm not a line guy.
I'm not a line guy.
Did we do it?
We did. Let's do the summary.
All right.
You want you start.
All right. We start, McClane comes to La La Land. So John McClane was a cop in New York, and he is He is still currently, and he is landing at LAX on Christmas Eve. He's sitting next to a guy at the airport. The guy sees his gun, but Bruce Willis is like, I'm sorry, I'm a cop. And the guy says, this happens in reverse order. The guy says, if you're anxious, when you go to your hotel, take your shoes off and make a little fist with your feet so you can feel the carpet. And that's better than anything. But I feel like that's bullshit.
It's not. It feels amazing. You should do it. Okay. Seriously. You scrunch your feet and like count to 10, unscrunch it. Like do it. It does. It feels really great.
So he goes and he's going to a Christmas party at his wife's work. So the wife's company sends Argyle, who's a limo driver, to pick him up at the airport.
Which is real nice. That's sweet. And it's like, I love how they really lean into and on the nose, he's an everyman. He doesn't even sit in the back of a limo.
Hell yeah. Nice.
He sits in the driver's seat because he's a working dude. He's a stiff. He's not a posh, namby-pamby, what's it?
Exactly. Blue collar. But who's not blue collar is the wife and two kids who moved out to California. John hoped she wouldn't hack it out and come home. He's got bad guys to put away. Did he say that? Like, I hope she would fail.
No. Remember, Argyle says, so you were hoping your wife would flame out and come running home to you. And it didn't work out that way. Is that right? He's like, you got me figured out, Argyle. And then the reason he wouldn't come to LA is like, he's got bad guys to put away. That's what he said.
Anyway, this company, oh boy, and this building, especially the Nakatomi Plaza, is snazzy. The fancy computer tells him his wife goes by her maiden name. Oof, yikes. His wife, Holly, and him go to her office where our friend Harry Ellis is doing a line of cocaine on her desk and bragging about her Rolex. Tension. Oh, because she's successful and she has so much money.
Ellis is supposed to be such a douche, but he's like, come on, so show him the company gift. You got a Rolex, which is like a $10,000 gift. And here's what I'm thinking, man. It's nice that she has someone in her life who is celebrating her success. Okay.
For our listeners who have not seen this movie, Ellis is a guy. He's a guy who works there.
And he's just like, come on, show. And we're like supposed to be like, haha, he's such a douche. But like, good for you, Ellis.
And yeah,
she earned that fucking Rolex.
I mean, he also acts douchey, but that's fine.
Right. I mean, it is rude to do coke on her desk. Like, go to your office. What are you doing?
Unless he just does coke at everyone's desk. Just like, that's the thing.
But it's a weird power move.
This is my desk. I've claimed it. I've done the coke.
So anyway, John goes into her bathroom because she has a dope office that she has earned through her hard work. And he takes his shoes off to do the thing, but then terrorists burst in and there's very brief nudity. This is a little fun joke because at the beginning, Hulu told us that there was brief nudity and all of us like racked our brains for 10 minutes trying to figure out whether there was nudity.
Yeah.
And apparently like for 2 seconds when the terrorists come in, you see boobs for like literally half a second. So we were like, it should have been very brief.
Should have been VBN. Yeah.
But they don't get John. He escapes and assesses the situation, which I kind of like. He goes to the stairs. He's like, all right, there's this many floors. I saw like five guys, blah, blah. Because anyway, so this guy who super sounds German, perfect German accent, Hans Gruber, gives a speech about the Nakatomi Corporation's greed. And he takes the CEO, Takagi, up to this super cool room with models everywhere, which I really like. I also like that there's a line where John McClane runs to Argyle. He's like, good building. He's like, yeah, but there's a lot of floors under construction. It'll be great when the construction is done. I'm like, okay, yeah, because that's going to come up.
How would you have done it? How would you have written that?
You don't have to say it. I feel like nobody would question, like, but why are there floors that aren't built yet? Nobody would say that.
Hey, if I'm going to defeat terrorists later, is there any floors that I can go in? Oh, yeah, totally.
So anyway, Gruber wants Takagi to give him the computer codes to steal the $640 million worth of negotiable bearer bonds, whatever the fuck those are. I'm sure John will tell us. It's locked in the vault in the basement. They're not terrorists, you guys. They just want money.
For some reason, I thought you guys were saying bearer bonds, like it was one word.
Oh.
And the word was bearer bonds.
Well, does bearer bonds make more sense to you?
I guess not, but bearer bonds sounds like it's something you would eat at Christmas.
Aw. Anyway, he shoots Takagi in the head. which John sees. I really like that scene where John was just like John McClane was like, oh God, I can't believe I let him die. But no, he would have killed you too. And I don't know. I felt he was genuinely wrestling with that was hard for him. So Gruber has a computer guy and he's like, he's just going to break in. It's fine.
All right. Action time. The henchmen are sent after a noise, which is John McClane. This is confusing and quick, but the computer guy says they can break six locks, but the seventh can only be opened if the power for the city block goes down. Gruber is all over that.
Yeah, see, I don't know why, but I didn't really get that for the first few viewings of this until it comes up later. And I'm like, I guess they must have said it. I thought this scene went quickly.
Gotcha. Meanwhile, John's trying to find any way he can alert the police. That's his number one plan because the police are great. And his plan is to set off the fire alarms to alert authorities.
No matter how you feel about the police, if you're in a terrorist situation, yeah, you should probably call the police, Michael.
Or maybe we could like organize a community sort of crime resistance. You know, if we had more funding, you know,
for terrorism?
Anti-terrorism. You know, not everything has to go under the umbrella of the police. You know, what are we going to have them solve all our fucking problems? You know what they do? They fucking solve it with a gun and they shoot everybody. And this is America.
In this particular specific instance, that's okay.
I mean, it's contrived. That's all I'm going to say. Romance cover model Tony goes after him. There's a guy named Tony and he looks like that.
He also is wearing a sweatshirt and matching sweatpants. That's important.
Which is like every romance cover. It's like, oh, same color.
I don't know why. The guy doesn't look hot at all, but he's really muscly and has long blonde hair. So I kept thinking of him as a romance cover model.
John kills him. Now he has a gun and radio.
And a lighter.
Well, you should have wrote that down. Hans is addressing the hostages about Mr. Takagi, who won't be joining us for the... I can't do it. Won't be joining us for the rest of his life. The elevator opens. Dead Tony is wearing a Santa Christmas hat and sweatshirt, says, "Now I have a machine gun." Ho, ho, ho.
See, Michael, Christmas movie.
Here's the thing. Why did he reveal that information?
Now I have a machine gun. Ho.
What are you doing?
Ho. I was trying to do Alan Rickman. I can't. It's so good the way he says.
Ho. Ho. Ho.
Ho. Ho. I can't.
None of our voices are deep enough, yeah.
So tensions rise. Wait,
I ask you a question. Why
would he tell to like throw him off?
But that's dumb.
I don't know. I don't know anything.
He should see like,
because they already know that there's a guy around.
So he's just having fun.
Maybe he's having a fun time.
I don't think it's strategic. That's all I'm saying. I think he's being immature.
I mean, he's not perfect. Okay.
Thank you.
So McLean gets the roof to radio for help with that radio he's got. And he talks to a 911 operator. It's very funny because she's like, excuse me, sir, this is for emergency. I was like, what the fuck do you think this is? And it's a whole thing. And they're like, all right, let's just send a black and white over. Cut to this cop who's buying a ton of Twinkies because his wife is pregnant.
And it's funny because cops eat Twinkies.
Right. Well, no, he's like, I thought you guys eat donuts. Which is very funny. Funny joke.
Knee slapper, yeah.
So then cut back to McLean has a shootout with some henchmen. He escapes through the air ducts, which Michelle talked about. The Twinkie cup comes in, and then there's a henchman disguised as a super, super normal, very American security guard who says, everything is just A-okay, pal. I'm watching sports on the TV. And he's like, cool. Sounds great.
Don't worry. I'm watching sports on the TV. That was a great line when he said that.
He does like try too hard to be normal. He's like, I got $50 on this game with the Redskins. He's like, all right, shut up.
Your delivery is so chipper, it makes me laugh.
So the cop heads out. McLean's like, what the fuck are you doing? I got to get your attention. So he decides to throw a fucking body on his cop car. And he says, welcome to the party, pal.
Nice.
Also, there's a news guy that comes in and it's a lame story thread. I don't really care for
it. I like that actor, though.
You know what, though, Michael?
What's up?
Reporters are important. Local news is important.
That actor, I think he's in Ghostbusters and RoboCop. I like that actor. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Cowboy versus Dapper Gentleman. Cowboy being John McClane. That's the heading. We're reading it in kind of a whatever. McClane chats with Gruber over the radio. Gruber calls him just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he is John Wayne. Which is funny, because John Wayne wanted to be in this movie, right? That was one of our facts. No, that was Clint Eastwood. Fuck.
That's pretty much the same.
Edit. Grover asks McClane if he really thinks he stands. Man, we're going through every single detail. Stands a chance, and John is all yippee, you know. Han learns that the detonators are missing, and this is important because they really, really need the detonators, which would explode the roof. The cop from earlier, who's buying all the Twinkies, Officer Powell, starts chatting with McClane, and they become good buddies. And that's really the emotional relationship of this movie.
I felt that way more than him and his wife.
I mean, that's what they were going for, but they never kissed. I think they should have kissed.
That would have been cool.
That would have been hot. The deputy police chief shows up and yells at McClane, tells him not to get
involved. Which is what he should do.
Right, this is responsible.
Because he doesn't know that McClane is a cop. Like, civilians should not get to play hero. That is just, that's right.
But they got
and we're supposed to be against the deputy police chief here.
But they got the actor who's like typecast to be just unlikable.
Yeah, he is the principal in the Breakfast Club who's like, you know, when you mess with the bull, you get the horns. That's what he says in the movie to children.
As a little boy, you get the horn, kids. Meanwhile, Ollie's standing up for her people and not letting on that she's married.
I really like Holly's character. I think she's really badass.
And she gives her name away at the end. It's just a great
which
arc.
Is really cool. It's really just cool. To, like,
she gives away their Rolex
husband.
And she says, thank God, now I will kiss this dirty man.
It's okay. They don't end up together.
I don't like it at all. Why do you like her?
Oh, I just like, because she comes in and she's like standing at this guy. It's like, who made you in charge? Like, you did when you killed my boss. Now, here's what we need. And he gives it to her because she's a strong lady.
Yeah.
Although I don't, at the beginning, when the terrorists come in, she puts down the picture of her and John and she's like, Miss Gennaro, I'm not married. And it's like, why do you think that's going to come up? I mean, it does, but it's weird that you knew that was going to come up.
Right. That's funny.
By the way, John is such a dick to her about not going by her married name. And she says to him, you know, I work for a Japanese company and they don't like married women. So I just have to go. And he's like, fuck you. I don't know. He's just,
but like,
just
you don't even need that excuse.
Also, just go by what you want.
Right. Also, fuck off, John.
Well, okay, Michael, to be fair, married and you've changed your name and then you are separated and change your name back to something else, it does probably send a message. So I think that's what he was reacting to.
That's
fine. Her reaction or her explanation was fine.
I'm not defending her. I'm mad against John McClane.
I guess I was weirdly defending John, but he's wrong. Anyway, what are we doing? It's my turn. So the bad deputy police chief decides to storm the building. Doesn't go well. SWAT guys are like exploded with rocket launchers and stuff. And then McClane decides to throw a chair full of C4 down an elevator shaft. I don't really get what that does.
Just for fun. He's just having a good time.
Super fun. So after that explosion, sexy Harry Ellis comes in because he's going to negotiate his way out of this. And I have to read this because it's my favorite quote. You see, he comes in. It's like, it's not about what I want. Hans, bubby. It's obvious you're not some dumb schmuck here to snap up some purses, am I right? You're very perceptive. I watch 60 Minutes. I say to myself, these guys are professional. They're motivated. They're happening. I.e., they want something. Now, personally, I couldn't care less about your politics. Maybe. And then he says some racist stuff. And he says, I figure you'd negotiate. Business is business. You use a gun. I use a fountain pen. What's the difference? Awesome.
That's pretty good. It's pretty good lines.
But then he lets on, he tells him who John is. So Gruber knows John McClane is a cop, and then he shoots Ellis in the face.
Fuck. Damn it.
So Hans gets the police on the radio. He's like, I release my comrade in arms. Says like, 7 people in the Canadian Liberation Front and 20 people in the Irish. And he's like, I don't know. I just read stuff in Time magazine. I just need to buy some time.
You know what made this movie so much better?
What?
The sound effect that they use in 24 when they go to a commercial break.
Which is...
Pickle! I'm going to play the real sound effect after it. You'll be like, wow, that was the same.
That's just a clock noise.
What? What clock do you know that goes, pickle, Pecaw. There's like a caw to it.
You sound like a dying bird.
Pecaw. And that's not what other clocks sound like. You tell me that's a normal clock. It's not a normal clock.
I mean, it's not a normal clock, but it's...
That's
it's
what you said.
It's a dramatized clock sound.
Well, that's weird.
That's weird.
That's not a normal clock.
Anyway, go on, Michael.
All right. What the fuck? Ouchies. That's the heading of this part. Hans goes to the roof to check out explosives and runs into John. He puts on a fake American accent. Super believable because he's very good at accents.
He's so good at accents.
John gives him a gun. They chat. When Hans tries to shoot, there were no bullets in that gun. Clever. McClane saw right through it.
Right. And it's like, wow, John McClane's so smart. He could tell that guy wasn't really American.
Just kind of, yeah. So John has the upper hand, except the bad guys show up and shoot a bunch of glass for barefoot McClane to walk over.
Wait, tell your fun fact about that, Michael.
Oh, that he wore fake feet during filming? That's the fun
That's
fact?
That's it. That's the whole fact.
Yep. And
it's fun!
Woohoo! And Hans gets the detonators. John, oh boy, oh boy, he has a lot of bad owies. Chats with Officer Powell, who is the guy that he likes, about killing a kid. We're getting some character development for the cop. And the cop accidentally shot a kid. And
which is like, that's fair to never, you know, be what? A cop again.
And it's just so hard for the cop.
That must be really hard
that's
for
so,
you.
That's super fucking hard for you.
He doesn't say if he
you.
Killed him, I guess.
That's like so
just
hard.
Just as he shot him?
That's
I don't
like,
know. It's
God,
terrible.
You must be so hard. It also has the feds in charge, which is bad for some reason.
Anyway, yeah, the feds come in. They turn the power off, which is what they needed for the lock. So it was Hans' plan all along. Just insane. FBI is going to helicopter in. So, oh, by the way, Hans' plan is going to blow up the roof. He's going to make it seem like everybody died, including these so-called terrorists. But it's not, because they're just going to be. So then we go. So, yeah, they're going to blow up the roof. Reporter goes to the Gennaro home and he says to the housekeeper, I'm going to call INS if you don't put kids on the air, which is really gross.
Does that mean, what is INS? Is that the ICE?
That is the ICE before. Anyway. So John figured out the roof situation. Holly and the gang are being gathered up on the roof. She sees the kids on TV. Hans figures out that Holly is John's wife. I forget how. That seems crazy. Anyway, so John is fighting Carl and then gets shot in the shoulder, but somehow manages to hang him with a chain. It's fucking nuts, Michael.
Here's what's more nuts as our fiery conclusion to the end of this amazing thriller. John tells the hostages to get off the roof. It's going to blow. Holly has been taken to the vault. FBI is shooting at John, so the only way he can get off the roof is to wrap a fire hose around himself and jump. He's fine. He goes through a window. He sees some packing tape. Argyle has been in a parking garage this whole time, who is just the limo driver, and ramps in his limo into the bad guy.
I think someone meant to write.
Yeah. He rams his limo into the bad guys. Why? Don't worry. He saw the ambulance that the villains were planning to escape with, and he's like...
But how would he have put that together? That's what's happening.
Oh, I'm just trying to explain what's happening. You're right that it is weird. John limps his way to Hans, who has a gun to Holly's head. He drops his weapon. He's like, all right. Only to have a secret weapon tied to his back. Oh,
taped.
Yeah. The tape.
Taped.
What did I say?
You said tied because that's what I wrote.
Oh, a secret weapon taped to his back.
It was
sort of
so
a
good,
sticky tie.
Because he's like bleeding all over, and Hans like, drop your weapon. He drops his weapon. He's like, I guess
so. We all win because Hans is falling out the window. Except hold on. He's hanging on by what? By Holly's Rolex, which seems far fetched. That he'd be hanging on by the watch. How do you hang on by someone's watch?
Don't, that's fine.
But don't worry, It is sort of a symbol of her success and her growth, but she does take, don't worry, she does take it off and Hans falls to his death.
You know, I read that she takes off, but I do think actually John takes it off for her, which is also super cool.
Super cool.
Anyway, everything's great. Everyone gets out. John, Officer Powell, they exchange meaningful looks and they hug. But oh no, somehow the guy that he hung and was on the exploding roof is alive and he comes out. But Officer Powell, you know what, Michael?
Yeah.
He can kill again.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay. Cop murdering people.
Yay.
That's what we love.
So he kills Carl. And Argyle's there to take them home. But not before Allie punches a TV reporter and says her name is Mrs. McLean.
Nice.
And the happy couple drives off, hopefully to a hospital, because John has been shot in the shoulder.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking this Christ. Like, he's bleeding everywhere. Take him to a goddamn hospital. Anyway, yay.
Yay. That
was
Die
Hard.
Here's what's fiery is our next segment. What's it called? Bro Call, where John, our brother.
Ba-ding, 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 ba-ding.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Hi,
hey,
John,
have you seen the film Die Hard?
I have, and frankly, I'm glad that Flaherty's on film is finally getting around to celebrating Christmas movies because it's way overdue.
Yeah. Wait, we've done one. We've done A Wonderful Life and probably other ones.
I'm just doing a bit. And you did Miracle on 34th Street because I recommended it as the first major Christmas movie.
See how funny the bit is now? We just keep going. John, give us some thoughts about Die Hard.
Yeah. So, obviously, I like Die Hard because, you know.
You're human.
I'm a person. Yeah. It's an amazing movie. I think probably my favorite part of the movie is just the trio of lead actors. I think they're all great in what they're bringing to the movie.
Trio?
Yeah. John McClane, Alan Rickman, and the cop whose name escapes.
Mr. Family Matters?
Powell.
Yeah. He's definitely the third lead.
All right.
Okay. Agree to disagree on that one. I thought they played off really well off each other and brought a lot to the table, had really good characters. Obviously, I love Alan Rickman and what he's bringing to the movie. I was thinking about this movie, and I was going to say, like, while I like the top three, the second tier of actors I didn't particularly care for, but then I heard you doing that Bubby bit.
Tom's Bubby. I'm your white knight. It's my favorite.
I don't love the reporter. I don't love the deputy chief. What?
The reporter is like too evil in a weird way.
I do like how the feds are both named Johnson for no reason.
Oh, yeah. This is Officer Johnson. This is Officer Johnson. No relation. Like, what is that fit for?
This is Officer Johnson. No, the other one.
I did actually like that.
I really didn't care for Alan Rickman's henchman, particularly his number two, who then somehow lives to the end of the movie and is the last
Carl
kill. That was stupid. What?
Well, you know, Family Matters cop needed to learn to kill again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a dumb bit. It didn't need to happen. I like that other action movies have taken the time to develop the number two so you can have that sub boss. This movie didn't do that well.
No, I didn't need that.
When I was in the olden days, when I watched this movie, I always enjoyed this movie for Alan Rickman's scheme. And I always had the impression that it's well thought together and really well executed and smart. And then I watched that Die Hard documentary over Christmas last year where they really dig into it. And I learned that they were literally writing the movie while they were filming it.
Yep.
And that really exposed a lot of holes for me, like the one where they didn't actually know how they were going to escape the damn building until literally when they were shooting it. And they said, well, just put an ambulance in the truck.
And they're like, we have shots of inside the truck where there is no ambulance. And like, it's fine.
Oh, I forgot that. That's very funny.
Yeah. And like the Alan Rickman, John McClane. I like how you're saying Alan Rickman and John McClane. Bruce Willis and Alan Rickman scene. You realize just how shoehorned that is into the movie.
Well, I think that actually speaks to how
that's another story that they got that idea just because Alan Rickman was doing that impression on set. And they're like, we got to do that in the film.
That's very funny. No, that so I just think it speaks to how good Alan Rickman is at just playing this urbane mastermind that you just kind of buy it. It, you know, don't think about it too hard. You're like, he's so smart.
No, fuck that. We don't buy it. We're just having fun. That's
I definitely bought it.
I bought it.
I didn't
and
buy it.
I bought it once again in Die Hard 3. Right back to that well with Jeremy Irons.
Oh my God. Simon says. God, I love it so much.
And it makes no sense if you really think about it.
It makes no fucking sense. John, I've talked about Die Hard 3 on this podcast several times because I love that movie so much.
Hot freaking take. Die Hard 4 is my favorite Die Hard.
No, Die Hard 3 is my favorite.
Timothy Oliphant, I am there for you. Justin Long, I'm along for the ride.
Justin Long can fuck off.
I like Justin Long.
I disagree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, he's good.
I like the energy he brings to that movie.
I just... There was this very short-lived series with... Who's Sam Seaborn?
Rob Lowe.
And Timothy Oliphant plays himself, and he comes into the room and goes, whoa, 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 let me just address the elephant in the room. I don't remember anything else about that show, but that was so funny. Anyway, go on, John.
I haven't watched much Timothy Oliphant stuff, but I think I might really like him. Like, okay, he has Star Wars.
John, you would really like Deadwood, I think.
Oh, okay. I actually haven't watched it.
That's the Timmy Oliphant show. Yeah.
It's Opus Dei. Anyway, what grade do you give Die Hard?
So my overall thoughts on Die Hard, it is like one of those old school action movies where like it's kind of half action, half thriller, and really kind of leans into the action rather than beating you over the head with it, which I appreciate. But it didn't revolutionize that sort of thing. Like, Arnold movies were already happening by then.
I totally disagree, John.
Okay.
Because Arnold, like, it wasn't a real person, right? Like, these were like crazy super macho men, and he was like an everyman doing this stuff. So I think it did revolutionize it.
Yeah, I guess Bruce Willis was supposed to be an everyman, and he only after this movie became like the big action star.
Oh my God, I think this is the first time I've ever made you reconsider something slightly because of something I said. I just want this as a moment.
I think I'm going to give the movie an A-.
That's a perfect grade, John.
Yeah, there's just too many holes, and I really hated whatever the lieutenant's name was. The second in command of Rickman.
Mm-hmm. I like that guy.
Yeah, A-. That feels fair, but a great movie. Watch all the diehards. Don't think about the snowmobiles in D.C.,
all right.
I just brought up the snowmobiles in DC.
John, thanks so much.
Dad brings it up all the goddamn time. It's ingrained in my mind.
That was
bro call.
That was bro call.
Michael, what grade do you give this film?
I give this film a B because I don't care for it that much.
I'm going to give it an A- because I agree with everything John said.
Cool. Who are we sponsored by? I thought of something.
Okay.
My favorite thing about this movie, I think it has the fucking best name of any movie.
Die Hard is a really good name.
That's a fucking great name. I want my movie to be called Die Hard.
Yeah, anyway. I was so sad when the fifth movie was so terrible because it was what was the name? It was so, I thought it was really good. Sorry. A Good Day to Die Hard.
A Good Day to Die Hard.
It was so bad.
It's a great name. And I'm sad that they never did the Die Hard and 24 a series crossover, like they had one point someone pitched that idea to the film calling, which was going to be called Die Hard 24/7.
Shut your face! I'm so sad that's not a thing.
Which would have been great, obviously.
Oh, shit. I'm like depressed right now that that's not a thing.
They could have tortured so many terrorists, but who would not be terrorists for real?
No, they're just thieves. They're you just shouldn't torture thieves. People.
John McClane'd be like, Jack, you're going that you can stop.
Jack, I feel like we've all reconsidered this as an idea. Anyway, who are we sponsored by this week?
Let me check up the doc. We're sponsored by Crunch Bars. Which are they even any good?
Thank you so much for asking, Michael.
You're welcome.
In this film, Die Hard, one of the evil people, while they're waiting, they just eat a Crunch Bar. And I was like, I think I fucking love Crunch Bars, but I haven't had one in so long. Now, nowadays, when you buy one, it says in large letters on it, for some reason, made with real chocolate, as though that was a concern when buying a Crunch Bar. You know what? Fucking delicious. In the rest of the world, they're made by Nestle, but not in America. They're produced under license by the Ferrara Candy Company, a subsidiary of Ferrero.
Well, that's a fact. What's our next film? Do you know?
Our next film is, let me go through the thing. It's 10 Things I Hate About You.
Which is not a award-winning film.
We don't know that. It's probably won some awards.
Probably won some fucking Nickelodeon Teen Choice Awards or something.
Are you disparaging the Nickelodeon Teen Choice Awards on this podcast?
Stay tuned for that trailer and cut.
There's a difference between like and love. Because I like my Skechers, but I love my Prada backpack.
Bianca Stratford is the most popular girl at Padua High.
You're asking me out?
I'm down. I've got the 411, and you are not going out and getting jiggy with some boy. I don't care how dope his ride is.
Her sister, Kat, is something else entirely.
People perceive you as somewhat tempestuous. Heinous witch is the term used most often.
The only thing they have in common...
I am the only girl in school who's not dating.
Oh, no, you're not. Your sister doesn't date.
...is one simple rule.
Okay, you can date. When she does.
But she's a mutant. What if she never dates?
Then you'll never date. Oh, I like that.
For Cameron,
no one will go out with her.
It's a problem.
Would any of you be interested in dating Katarina Stratford?
Maybe if we were the last two people alive and there were no goats. Are there goats?
For Patrick.
And what about him? I heard he ate a live duck once. Everything but the beak and feet.
It's a challenge.
So you two are gonna help me tame the wild beast.
Absolutely.
And for Kat.
Kat!
It's about time.
Well, come on, think about it. Me with my arm around you.
You covered in my vomit.
I'd like to discuss tomorrow night with you. Now, as you know, it's the prom.
Touchstone Pictures presents...
Stay cool, bro. Pass you.
A story for every guy who's ever tried.
You never give up, do you?
Was that a yes?
No.
Well, then was that a no?
No.
Every girl who's ever hoped...
You're not as vile as I thought you were.
This is not good.
And anyone who's ever been taken completely by surprise...
She kissed me.
Where?
In the car.
Concentrating awfully hard considering it's gym class.
Ow! 10 Things I Hate About You.